of the based on the alpha BB, the so-called piecewise quadratic perturbation based alpha BB, the generalized alpha BB. Then we're going to connect and identify the functional forms of the convex classes of underestimators. And we're going to discuss also a new development for new classes of convex underestimators. So first of all, with the objectives. The primary objective here is, of course, mathematically, is to obtain with theoretical guarantee the global optimum solution, epsilon global optimum solution. But for most of practical applications, it's very important to obtain valid lower and upper bounds on the global solution. As the previous speaker identified, it's also important that to identify good quality local optimum solutions, since these do not only arise in engineering applications, they also arise in problems in thermodynamics and protein folding, where you would like to calculate the free energy and the entropy contributions. And the fourth objective is to enclose all solutions, not to identify, because it's impossible to enclose all solutions of constrained systems of nonlinear equations. So in terms of the application areas, we can see for the C2 continuous NLPs, where you constrain NLPs, you minimize an objective function subject to a vector of equalities and inequalities, and here you have the functions f, h, and g being C2 continuous. You see a plethora of applications, starting for pooling and blending problems, parameter estimation, protein folding, peptide docking, NMR structure refinement. So all the applications span a different number of scales, from the microscopic, mesoscopic, to the macroscopic scale. We're going to have a talk later on by Ignacio Grossman, following mine, where he's going to focus on mixed digits and nonlinear programming problems. Here you have a vector of x and y variables, and you have very important applications in the area of process synthesis, in the area of scheduling, design, and synthesis, in the area of metabolic pathways, as well as nesting of arbitrary objects. And the last sort of motivational area is the system of equality and inequality constraints, with box constraints where also there are C2 continuous. There are very important applications in the location of azeotropes, for instance in distillation columns, but also in the location of transition states. The previous speaker talked about pathways going from one local minimum to another local minimum. You have to follow a path with a first order, or a sequence actually of first order and second order transition states. Is it possible to enumerate all of them? This is a very important problem in the dynamics of protein folding. So with that now, let's focus first on the contributions that I have the time to devote, actually. Convex envelopes for trilinear monomials. So if you have a product of x1 times x2, x3, is it possible to develop explicit facets that will define the convex envelope? This is the question that we posed a few years ago. So up to actually 83 and 76, that was only known actually for bilinear terms, by Al-Kayal and Falk, and also it was earlier developed by McCormick. So it turns out that the convex envelope is polyhedral over the hypercircular domain. We need to use the concept of triangularizing the domain, and the key thing is how to find the correct triangularization that will have affine dependencies. So I'm going to give you one of the theorems, actually, that we have. That is, we have a product of x times y times z. I'm considered to be all positive. We have developed theorems to be actually on both the positive and the negative domain. And this is if this condition holds true, then these are the six linear equality constraints that define explicitly the facets of the convex envelope. As an example, let me consider the product of x1, x2, x3. These are the corresponding intervals for each of the variables. We make actually this transformation, we check the condition which holds true, and then here is the explicit form. So if you are interested in devising explicit forms for trilinear terms, now we have complete results. Now, why is this important? It's important because when you have trilinear terms, what you could do instead is to try to take a product of the two variables, define a new variable, let's say the x1 times x2 defined as a new variable w, and then w times x3 you define another bilinear term and you write the convex envelopes. Is the writing of the two convex envelopes, the bilinear convex envelopes, equivalent to this? And the answer is no. And what you see here is cut. This is the corresponding convex envelopes, and here you see the recursive arithmetic in the green, the arithmetic interval actually in the blue, and you see that actually they do not correspond to the convex envelope of the trilinear monomial. Of course, we would like to develop it for higher with arbitrary bounds, but that's actually, it's an open question in the literature. All right. So that is actually the first sort of contribution for convex envelopes of trilinear terms to define the best possible convex underestimators. What about trigonometric functions? Is it possible to develop, now not convex envelopes, but convex underestimators of trigonometric functions? Why do we care about trigonometric functions? They appear mainly in molecular conformation problems, when you have rotation around the bonds, for instance, and they are critical in trying to convex underestimate the objective function. So I have here a class of trigonometric functions, f of x, alpha times the sine x plus s. This is the interval for the x variables, and then we'll do a very simple transformation. I'm going to define the upper bound to be the difference between the upper and the lower bound. This is a simple, actually, transformation. And the key idea here is, given such a function, which is a generic trigonometric function, is it possible to develop a convex underestimator that is a trigonometric function itself? Okay? So that is the question that we posed. So it turns out, so we postulate now a three-parameter trigonometric function. The unknown is the alpha, x sub s, and the b. And the key idea is to identify conditions for which this function is going to be a convex underestimator on the other one. So in order to do that, we need to develop a number of properties. We need to calculate these three parameters, a alpha, beta, and x sub s, and prove actually the convex underestimator for the new function. For the function to be convex, these two conditions need to be satisfied. And the first property that we have, if we match these two functions at the bounds, very simple actually constraints, then we can have an explicit solution for A and B. In regard to the third parameter, which is the x sub s, we have another property that this phase shift is be given by this, where requires actually a very simple numerical solution of this class of problem that can be solved actually very efficiently and very reliably. But there are some other properties. And the third property is that this function, the original function, has a lower bound by this function phi of x. And property 4, we can prove that this function is convex. But more importantly, property 5, we can quantify what is the maximum separation distance between the original function and the new convex underestimator. And this actually maximum separation distance is shown on the right-hand side here, and we can show that the maximum separation distance grows linearly with the size of the domain. So that's also a very interesting result. That's also important because if you implement this or you embed it in a branch and bound method, you need to have this maximum separation distance so as to prove actually finite epsilon convergence of the branch and bound technique. So a simple illustration, I have a function, sine of x plus sine 10x divided by x plus ln of x and a linear component, and I can identify the convex underestimator, which is this form. So I calculated these quantities here, the numbers, and for the individual terms. I put them together, and this is the corresponding convex underestimator. And you notice the lower bound for this is about minus 9.8. If you use some other techniques, like the alpha BB that we have developed, which is general, does not exploit any structure for trigonometric terms, you obtain a lower bound that is much weaker. So it pays off to develop, for certain classes of problems, convex underestimators that are custom-made to the functions that actually are in question. So we have seen the convex envelope for trilinear monomials. We have seen new theoretical developments for convex underestimators for trigonometric functions that are trigonometric functions themselves. What about now if we revisit some, actually, of the developments in the area of general functions, general C2 functions? And we're going to discuss the P alpha BB approach. To do that, I will very simply point out that the alpha BB, before we go into the piecewise alpha BB, is applicable to twice continuously differentiable functions in both the objective and the set of constraints. The principle is to generate two sequences, an upper bounding and a lower bounding sequence, and prove that these two sequences converge within epsilon in a finite number of iterations. And of course, the most important thing is, how do you develop these convex underestimators that have a theoretical guarantee of being a valid lower bound on a global solution? We use the principle of divide and conquer, branch and bound. We generate actually convex underestimators in the original domain. This is the lower and the upper bound. We partition actually accordingly the domain, and we have a sequence of lower bounds in the corresponding domains, and we select the lowest out of this, and we go up through the list. Of course, we use properties in the continuous space of branch and bound that are similar to the mixed digilinear programming case for fathoming. So we use similar criteria for fathoming. So in the AlphaBB, when you have an objective function, and for each of the constraints, equalities or inequalities, we express them as, or we decompose them as a linear term, a convex term, and for these two we do not touch them, a bilinear, for which we can actually apply the McCormick's convex envelope, trilinear, now we do have a convex envelope for trilinear terms, fractional, Nick Sahinidis and Ignacio Grossman developed actually convex envelopes for certain conditions of the fractional terms, fractional trilinear, signomial, Kostas Maranas, as part of his PhD thesis, developed actually valid convex underestimators for those. Univariate concave, we know that that is simply the line that goes through the end points. And the last one. So the AlphaBB really focuses on this last term, the term that does not belong to all of the rest. So it is the general non-convex actually term that is Cito continuous. So what we develop here is that we take this general non-convex term and we subtract a separable quadratic, so xi upper minus xi, xi minus xi lower, multiplied by alpha, where these actually alphas have to be greater or equal than zero and greater than the negative one half of the minimum eigenvalue on the overall domain, under consideration. So if that is the case, then you prove, first of all, this is positive. This is also positive. You subtract something, so it's a valid underestimator by construction. Second, if xi goes to the upper bound or to the lower bound, this term vanishes, and therefore it matches the function at the end points. Third, this function under this condition is convex in the whole domain. Fourth, if I reduce the domain, I can really define tighter underestimators. Fifth, this is the expression for the maximum separation distance. And you can see that the maximum separation distance is proportional to the square of the diagonal of the corresponding domain. So as the domain becomes smaller, and that is done actually through the partitioning, the branch and bound process, you are guaranteed that the function L of x will match from below the original function f of x. And of course, the convexity is true if the Hessian of this function plus twice of the diagonal, twice of the diagonal because this is a quadratic. So when I construct the Hessian matrix, I have the Hessian element, the Hessian matrix here, and I have 2 times alpha in the diagonal elements. So if that is positive semi-definite, that proves actually convexity. And in the PhD thesis of Claire Angeman, there have been 10 different methods that have been developed so as to actually prove and calculate the alpha so as to be positive semi-definite. And the key idea here is to, from the Hessian matrix, to go to the interval Hessian. So for every element, we calculate a valid lower and upper bound. And then a key property is that if I take the interval Hessian plus twice the diagonal matrix, if this is positive semi-definite, then the original actually problem is positive semi-definite. And what I'm going to show you here that have been a number of methods is a scale Gisgorian theorem approach that Claire developed, which is really an analytical method of calculating it. So in the classical Gisgorian theorem for real matrices, you calculate a bound of the minimum eigenvalue, which is the diagonal elements minus the summation of the absolute values of the off-diagonal elements in that row. We prove the theorem for interval matrices, where alpha, if it is taken as the maximum of 0 and the negative 1 half, lower bound on the diagonal, and minus the max of the lower and upper bound of the absolute values scaled properly, that's a valid lower bound on the so as to make the function convex. So all these actually you calculate from the interval Hessian, so you have an explicit, almost trivial calculation for the alphas. So as an illustration, this is a pseudo-ethane. This is the corresponding function in one variable. The actual function has three minima very close to the global solution. So in the first iteration, you see you have very weak convex underestimator. You don't even see the function here. This is just the convex underestimator. You partition into two domains, and you see the function now, and you see the corresponding convex underestimators, and you see the matching from below. So that actually goes through the branch and bound process. But I want to revisit that. And I want to look at the following. So what is the key concept? I take a function, it is Cito continuous, it is arbitrarily nonlinear, and what I have done, I subtracted a separable quadratic. So and I developed a nice properties and proved convergence and so on. But what is the potential drawback of that? Is that the curvature of this function is constant. So is it possible to do something else? Is it the only function of form that I can have? That is, can I do something different? And the idea behind the piecewise alpha BD is to partition the domain to some domains from the very beginning, to calculate those alpha parameters, not in the overall region, but in each of the regions. And then to construct an underestimator, so I construct convex underestimators for each of the subregions, then I'm going to use this information so as to construct the overall convex underestimator. So there are three properties that I'm going to exploit: smoothness, convexity, and underestimation for that. So I take a particular domain, in one variable I partition into several actually domains. I'm going to define a function like this, where Q of X now is a summation of all the Qs in each of the segments, but now each Q will not only have this separable quadratic component, will have a linear part. So I will have actually betas and gammas. And I will need those so as to utilize information so as to construct the overall convex underestimator. To do so, to join all these pieces, I use information about the extrema, the function values, and the smoothness of the gradients. And it turns out that you can formulate a linear system of equations that has an analytical solution. In other words, this is the linear system. This is its solution for the betas and the gammas. So now I have the alphas, I have the betas and the gammas in almost a no-cost basis to derive the new class of convex underestimators. So let me walk you through an example. This is a typical Lennard-Jones potential. I'm only doing it in the distance space. These are the corresponding bounds. So I calculate the second order derivatives. I will need that for the calculation of the alphas. And I'm going to partition the domain into subdomains. So in the overall domain, this is the alpha BD classical underestimator. This is the alpha. This is the quadratic expression. Now I'm going to partition into subdomains. So in two domains, these two domains, between 0.85 and 1.425, this is the corresponding expression for the convex underestimator. So I have the classical alpha BD, and I have the linear part here. Similarly, in the other domain, I have the corresponding expressions. What does that mean? It means that if I have the original function f of x, this is the corresponding standard alpha BD underestimator. So as you partition into two domains, you notice it's tighter. If you partition into more domains, it actually becomes tighter. So in other words, this is a very simple method of improving the original alpha BB by doing some very little actually extra work on the individual domains. Of course, this is applicable to n dimensions. I will just show you the Sinks Hammelbach function. And you have the corresponding alphas. And for the expression, now you have the alpha BB underestimator consists of the two separable terms. And we have to do in the corresponding domains, we need to generate the convex underestimators. We generate the corresponding Q1 and Q2 functions in each of the domains. And this is the alpha VB underestimator. This is the P alpha VB underestimator. So we can actually show that this is a tighter actually function. So we have seen the alpha VB for general C2 functions that I cannot exploit in a structure. We have seen the P alpha BB, that what it does, the key idea, splits the domain into subdomains, generates the alpha BB underestimators in each, then it merges them together, and we prove that it provides a tighter underestimator. So now, I'm going to switch gears and think about another question. In all of these, I have only used functional forms, that is the functions that I'm subtracting, that are separable quadratic. So I'm posing the question, is it possible not to use a separable quadratic form and still develop new theory? And that's the basis for generalized alpha BB. So the key point was, I need to define a relaxation phi function. This function actually depends on some parameters, now gamma. It's going to be a negative function, so as when I add a negative function, which is equivalent to subtracting, I generate an underestimator. So I'm asking the question, I would like to have an underestimator. By construction, since this negative is going to be an underestimator, what are the properties of this function? And the new form of underestimator function we're going to propose is now not separable quadratic, but it's separable exponential. So this is the gammas now are the parameters that I need to obtain. So what are the properties of this function? It's separable, obviously, because it's summation over I over each of the variables. It is negative, you can see from the definition. If xi is equal to the lower bound, it matches the point, so it matches the function then points. It is diagonal and the positive definite matrix, if I consider the Hessian of this. Phi of x is a convex function. And another very useful property, it achieves its minimum at the middle point of x and the maximum at the corner points. So it is a new functional form that has some inherent, very nice mathematical properties. So what do? We construct the underestimating function, which is f of x minus this term. Obviously, this is positive, it underestimates, and it matches the function and the corresponding points. Now, you can also prove maximum separation distance for this new functional form. And again, it has this characteristic of a square, but now it's not the distance of the domain, but it's actually through an exponential transformation. So, but again, you have the same principle, that is, as domain gets reduced, this right-hand side term is driven to zero, and the function matches from below the original function. So here we have, this is the new class of functional underestimators. This is the alpha b with the alpha, and there is a very important actually theorem that we prove. And the theorem states the following, that the convex underestimator provided by this new function is tighter than the convex underestimator provided by the alpha b. So the exponential functional form provides tighter lower bounds. We have also some very other, actually very, very useful connections between the two, because these are two different types of convex underestimators for general C2 functions. So we're asking the question, what is the connection between the alphas in the alpha VB and the gammas in the generalized alpha VB? So if we have upper bounds on the values of the alpha parameters, then the underestimator with these values for the gammas, which depend on the upper bounds on the alphas, have the same maximum separation distance. That is, we have established the connection on the maximum separation distance between the alpha BB and the generalized alpha BB. We have also the converse of that. That is, if I have upper bounds on the gammas that satisfy these conditions, then the underestimator of the alpha BB with these values for the alphas will have the same maximum separation distance as the generalized alpha BB. So let me just have an illustrative example, and it's the same illustrative example of the pseudoethane. It is the three actually minima. This is the corresponding global solution of this nasty looking function. The alpha BB, the corresponding upper bound is 77, the lower bound is 0.85. Checks about the convexity, and after 21 partitions, we can calculate that the minimum value obtained by the alpha BB is minus 762. So that's the lower bound, theoretically guaranteed lower bound. The generalized alpha BB, it has a much improved actually bound, and the ratio actually defines that. So we just seen an illustration of the important property of the generalized alpha BB, and obviously a picture will reveal that better. This is the generalized alpha BB, this is the alpha BB. Okay. So we have seen, yes. This is for all of the functions. It's a generic result. Yes. Yes, yes, it's significant, actually. In most of the cases, it's significant, but there is at the cost of proving, actually, the convexity. So nothing is free. That is, since now you have an exponential function there, you need to do extra work so as to prove the convexity for the underestimator compared to having the just a separable quadratic which adds only the two alphas in the Hessian. So it's not as simple as just having the Scale-Gisgoring theorem to calculate the minimum bound and the minimum eigenvalue. You have extra work, so there is a trade-off. And we investigated that trade-off as well. But yes, the significance for most of the functions actually is quite significant, is quite large. So we have seen two functional forms. And both functional forms generate valid convex underestimators for general C2 non-convex functions. But are there any other ones? So it took us several years to develop all these theorems and all these properties. Are there any other ones? So this is the question we try to ask actually with Krainovitz and about the selection of these appropriate auxiliary functions. And is there an auxiliary function, an optimal auxiliary function to use? So I need to quantify what I mean by optimal. And obviously, to being here actually and presenting to a mathematical audience, the answer is yes. So what are these conditions? So we have seen the alpha db, simply the separable quadratic. And what about if we perform a linear scaling? This would change the units actually in the model. So I change xi to g sub I, which is a linear scaling, and similarly for h sub I. Then I can write this expression for the phi of x. And you see, I have the same expression with a multiplicative term. So it looks promising. What about if we generalize the linear scaling into a nonlinear scaling? So I select the exponential. I look at the corresponding expression, I do the substitutions, and again I see a constant term here, and that should remind you about the generalized alpha db, the other functional form. So again, it is very promising. Because it reminds you about this expression, and there is a constant term in front. So, why do linear and exponential functions work well? Are there any better functions that do the job? And we're going to quantify these optimal underestimated functions by the notion of invariance. And we're going to consider shift invariance, that is, if I shift it by S, and you notice it comes up the same way, I'm going to consider also sine invariance, so multiply by minus 1, again, it satisfies the corresponding condition, and scale invariance. So what pairs of these functional forms satisfy these invariance conditions? So here you see the shift invariance and the sine invariance, and here is the scale invariance. So shifting actually, multiplying by negative, and the scale respectively. So shift and sine, so I'm going to group these two, and this is the result actually that I'm going to highlight. So it turns out shift and sine invariance is nothing else than the alpha db, the classical alpha db. Shift and sine invariance for the exponential terms is the generalized alpha db. So the message here is that both functional forms are optimal from the point of view of shift and sine invariance, and that's why actually the properties work very well. And in addition, given the previous theorem, given that the g alpha db provides tighter lower bounds, that is probably the method of choice. All right, so we have established now the alpha db, the p alpha db, which is simply partitioning the domain and constructing a tighter underestimator, again with the same convex underestimating functional form, a different convex underestimating functional form, which is an exponential. We have established whether there exist any others and whether they are optimal. We have proven that these two functional forms are optimal, and the connection actually between the g alpha b and the alpha b. So is it possible to develop, using all that information, even a new class, a new theory actually for valid convex underestimators? And these are fairly recent results. So in this case, we're going to do something different. We're going to study first univariate functions and then extend into multivariate functions. So this is work actually with Christantos Gunaris, and in this case, I have the blue function, which exhibits actually many local minima, and I'm going to use piecewise alpha b and underestimators for each of the domains. So I'm partitioning a variable x, a single variable, into n subdomains. I construct the convex underestimators, and I have explicit forms for this based on the Sckell-Gisgorin theorem. And then I'm going to identify the tangential linear segments required for the corresponding underestimators. So I'm going to define that in a moment. I'm going to use slope comparisons and the local solver suffices, and I'm going to construct an underestimator that's going to be C once more. Equipartitioning, for instance. I mean, of course, it can have an effect on the algorithm, but let's say we select in one variable to have equipartitioning into, let's say, 12 domains. We have investigated, and you're going to see computational results, what is the effect of the partitioning of the domain in a moment. So how do you generate those? There are two convex segments. They come from different parts of the piecewise alpha VB. There are three cases for tangential, two convex, a convex and actually another convex with this shape, and accordingly here So now, what we're going to do, we're going to utilize this inner and outer algorithm, so as to having this shape of the convex underestimating functions, to construct what you see the green elements here, all these tangential elements, and then out of this, I'm constructing this element C that is a linear tangential element valid for the whole, for the corresponding domain. I continue, and I construct respectively. So what do you see now? You have a convex part, you have a linear part, you have a small convex part, you have another linear part, and another convex part. So you can, so that's a valid, actually, underestimator. And this is the piecewise alpha BB with augmented with the tangent lines. So what I can do, I can really construct tangent lines in all of these segments, so as to have a tangent instead of the convex part, another actually linear part, here is another tangent, and so on. So now you can construct U of X, which is a piecewise convex underestimator, and you can construct the V of X, which is simply a piecewise linear underestimator of the function. So how does that work? I'm just giving you pictorially, actually, and then I'll give you the properties. So you have this nasty function, it's like that. You see the green function being the underestimator. Extremely good properties. What you see here is the alpha BB. Okay? For this univariate function. Similarly here, this is the new underestimators for the convex functions. And you observe, this is 40 and this is 8,000, minus 8,000. So significant improvement, actually, in the quality of the underestimators if you just focus on univariate functions. But now, it's very important to see what is happening for a variety of univariate functions, and we have a test set, actually, that comes out from Casado et al., where you see the effect of the partitioning. So Panos asked about partitioning to 2, partitioning to 4, 8, 16, 32, and so on. And you can see the optimal solution is minus 1. In 16 partitions, we have a lower bound of minus 1.5. In many of them, actually, you have identified very tight lower bounds on the global solution. So simply, in this case, just solving a very good, actually, underestimator really provides high quality, lower bounds on the global solution. And this is another set of functions. Again, you see a similar sort of performance all along. You don't need to go through many partitions in many of the instances. And even though you may stop for some of them, you have obtained, actually, a very good bracketing of the solution. So it pays. So why do we want to develop very tight convex underestimators? Simply because we cannot afford for large-scale problems later on to go through a huge branched bound tree to try to refine the bounds. So it pays, and there's a trade-off. How much effort you're going to put on the derivation of the convex underestimator and how good the convex underestimator is going to be. This is univariate. And this is actually very important because we want to establish properties that quantify what is the tightness of U of X, which is a piecewise convex, and what is the tightness of the piecewise linear convex underestimator. And you see actually different characteristics here. And the first property is that the underestimators become tighter as the level of the partitioning. That is, we know that as we partition further, we're going to get a much tighter, actually, lower bound. The second important property is that there is a finite level of partitioning for which U of X is the convex envelope. And that's an important result. That is, I can partition in a finite level and prove that the convex envelope for this function. And the third important result is that there is also a finite level of partitioning for which V of X, which is the piecewise linear, is epsilon close to V of X. So we have, I think, quantified in a very rigorous way not only the form of the underestimators, not only the derivation, but also the quality of those. So sufficiently large n, in other words, will close the gap at the root node. And that's important for certain classes of problems. But how do you move from a univariate to multivariate? So what was the idea? I take a single variable, it is in this dimension, and I'm going to partition that into subdomains. Now I'm going to do it for every slice of this so as to go to the other domains. So I'm going to slice through. So I'm going to generate for every permutation, it's going to be a univariate function, and I'm going to generate all these curves, which are the projections actually onto the corresponding domain. These functions are not known explicitly. However, the evaluations can be done reliably, assuming that we have a very reliable convex minimization solver. And these pieces are connected. Some others actually are not connected, so we need to take care of that. So we calculate the underestimator for the two functions, and it's valid actually for the overall domain. So this is a representation of this. This is the piecewise linear underestimator of the projected space. And this is actually for each of these underestimators how the corresponding lower bounds will look like. Then we repeat for the permutations. After we go this way, then we go that way, and we continue on the overall underestimator, and we generate all these actually slices. And then the question is, how do we combine all those? And it turns out we can work on the projected planes, and we can combine and find the corresponding tight underestimators. Now, we take into connection, of course, the endpoints and the line segments, and we have to identify as part of this calculation, we always have to calculate the 2D convex hull of those points. But there is an analytical result in computational geometry for this. So we repeat optionally for different variables, and then we consider the pointwise maximum of those so as to define the estimators. So another idea that we explored, which is not you don't see it frequently in the literature, is the domain rotation. And this idea is that when we do all these projections, do we lose any information? That's how actually we started thinking about it. And the idea is to rotate the domain, so still having the lower bounding problem as simply as a linear programming problem, but rotate it around and generate actually from different rotations the corresponding piecewise linear underestimators. So the first question is, what is the optimal domain rotation? In this case, we want to identify this matrix R, that is actually an orthogonal matrix that satisfies certain conditions. These are classical conditions for rotation of the matrices. So we take actually phi between 0 and pi 2, and then we consider all possible rotations. So effectively, you discretize the phi angle, and you construct those underestimators for all the possible rotations. What do you gain by doing that? You gain a tightness of the underestimator in all facets, in all parts of the domain. So you notice here, this is a bivariate function. You notice how tight the convex underestimator is, the yellow. We had to generate actually 162 cuts. The global minimum is 0.398. The lower bound is 0.316. Amazingly good quality. And this is the alpha VB lower bound. Similarly, for this function that is shown, again, we have almost actually termination at the root node. So for certain, yes, sure. So for certain functions, it pays off to do that. Here are other examples of bivariate functions actually under consideration. Again, you see the significant improvement, and you see there is a consistency in those this improvement as well. But always you have to check with many functions, because the area of global optimization has a very talented actually group of researchers across many disciplines. So you have to demonstrate that these types of convex underestimators are valid actually for a wide class. And here is actually another very challenging actually class of bivariate functions. Again, very good quality and relatively actually efficient CPU time on the generated solution. And then you see the investigation over different partitionings, and you see the quality. This is the global optimum. This is the lower bound. But what about multivariate functions, more than two dimensions? So here I have multilinear functions first. And what I want to draw your attention, if I look at these two columns, even with a partition of two, the underestimators actually that you generate are tighter than the alpha VB, which is very important. Also, as the partitioning increases, you see the improvement in underestimators, the property that I just highlighted. Also, in this particular case, the recursive arithmetic finds the right solution, but in this case, it does not. So it's still actually a very weak lower bound. So effectively, we see here, even with a new class of corresponding underestimated improvements and tight improvements. And what about general non-convex functions? So multivariate general non-convex functions, this is the global solution, this is the alpha BB, this is the new actually class of underestimators with the different partitioning. And again, what I want to bring to your attention is actually there are significant improvements in the quality of the lower bounds. Also, I want to bring to your attention that with the partitioning, you close the gap. For general, arbitrary general, multivariate non-convex functions, at the root node. So this is the multivariate functions, this is the CPU time performance, but I don't want to leave you with the impression that the complexity here, because I'm going to partition, I'm going to permute in the domains, is a simple case. So the complexity is after us. So the complexity analysis results depends on the rotations, depends on the active variables, depends on the permutations, and on the partitions. So our recommendation, so we realize that this problem probably will be very much applicable for variables up to 10 or maybe 20 variables. It won't be for more. But it can be a sub-problem in all of the other actually developments that we do. We are working actually on the implementation of the algorithm and testing all this. But I would like to conclude, since I have, according to Tom's actually notification on it a minute or so, I have tried to share with you some very fundamental developments that have taken place in the area of deterministic global optimization in regard to developing rigorous convex underestimators. So we started with trilinear monomials for x1 times x2 times x3. How do I develop the explicit facets of the convex envelope? Then, how do we, if I have trigonometric functions, how do I improve the convex underestimators? And we have seen here that you can develop a trigonometric function that is a convex underestimator to the previously defined trigonometric function. Then we introduced the concept of piecewise alpha VB, which is simply corresponds to partitioning the domain to subdomain, developing the alpha VB underestimators for each of the subdomains, and then developing properties of smoothness so as to unify and develop the P alpha VB underestimator. Then we have seen the generalized alpha VB, which is now we don't have the separable quadratic forms that you subtract, you have a different functional form, which is separable, but it is exponential. And it has some very nice properties related to this. Namely, that the lower bound provided is tighter than the alpha VB. And then we have seen, okay, over the 10 years we have developed these two functional forms. Is there a connection? Are they optimal? Is there another functional form that can really outperform them? And now we have an answer to that. Based on the concepts of shift and sign invariance, both functional forms are optimal. And in fact, the generalized alpha VB is better. And finally, I briefly introduced work actually that is in progress on new class of convex underestimators that goes actually from the univariate functions to the multivariate functions. And again, I have seen that there's a lot of potential of exploring those in the future. So with that, I would like to thank you for your attention, and I would be glad to try to answer any questions. Thank you.